You're working for free is what he means.
Yes, sir.
we thank you for taking the case. Thanks to both counsel.
That's not exactly a payment, but it's a gesture to write.
Move to the last case today, United States versus Hall.
Here's a classic that we should never ask for help right yet.
Good morning, Your Honors. This case presents a scenario of the type for which the Miranda protections were promulgated. Police officers are bringing pressure on a suspect to confess, and they're giving the impression that they are not leaving until that suspect does confess to something. In this case, the police officers never informed the defendant, Derek Hall, that he was free to not answer their questions or to ask them to leave. A witness testified that Hall underwent accusatory and aggressive questioning by the officers.
That's the guy upstairs that heard all the yodeling?
That's Mr. Macayo.
He was afraid to come down because he was a bad man himself.
He had an outstanding warrant. What's interesting about that testimony, Your Honor, is that the magistrate judge did not question the credibility of his testimony, and so it should be considered as well as all the other factors in this case. Additionally, one of the armed officers stood with Hall during virtually the entire interrogation and search, thereby effectively limiting his freedom of movement.
What did he say the officer do?
One of the armed officers stood next to Derek Hall while the search of his home was going on, which gave the impression, as many courts have found, that he was not free to move around.
What court, for instance, found that standing near him?
The 7th in the Sprosty case, court in the Sprosty case, as well as the 4th in the Griffin case.
Fill me in. I'm not as conversant with the particulars of the case. He stood nearby menacingly, or he was just standing by?
It's unclear from those cases whether it was menacing or not, but the idea was that
standing around near you, you're hooked.
It's giving the suspect the impression that you're not free to leave because someone's watching you.
Did he call the police?
He did call the police. He called the police because he was having a dispute with his girlfriend.
All right, she knocked out the windows of his car.
Right. But he did not instigate.
And he invited them in?
He invited them in because they told him that they were there to investigate his complaint against his girlfriend.
Well, that's what he called him for, so that's they were there for that purpose, weren't they?
That's absolutely right.
Okay.
The troubling aspect that we have is that they didn't reveal that the reason
that
they
were two screams. His girlfriend had beef, too. They didn't bother telling that.
Exactly. And so
Is your client really a very bright fellow, or have you ever met him?
I've talked to him on the phone, and he's actually pretty articulate.
Not too bright, but articulate.
He's articulate
enough to call the police.
Well, the record says that he was concerned that things were going to get out of control, and he wanted to bring officers in to keep things simmered down.
And he was dead right. They got out of control.
They did indeed.
Cops found things he didn't want found.
But the way that the officers came into his apartment may suggest why he had a calm demeanor, because he thought they were there to investigate his complaint, whereas only after they gained entry into his home did they tell him that they were actually there.
But didn't the word about his girlfriend accusing him of something come later?
No, they told him when they were outside that they were there to investigate.
No, but I mean, didn't the one officer went to talk to his girlfriend and they came to talk to him?
Yes.
It wasn't until after that officer joined them that they found out that he was being accused of something.
No, they knew. The record's very clear that both officers, Gutierrez and Strasser, knew and realized that they were there to investigate the complaint against him that his girlfriend said he had had a gun. So they knew when they were outside that they really wanted to come in to talk about that, but they didn't tell him. And that's, I think, a troubling aspect in the sense that I think it suggests they were looking for him to incriminate himself. And under that situation, it's appropriate to give the Miranda protections, and they didn't do it.
Well, how long into the conversation did the subject of the girlfriend's charges come up?
They They walk in, and I believe Mr. Hall asked them to sit down. They say, no, we'd prefer to stand, and then they tell him.
So right away.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. But they were already in his home, and I think that, that to all of us would be intimidating, perhaps.
Well, it doesn't obviate the consent. I mean, this was a purely consensual encounter, wasn't it?
It was a consensual encounter in the sense that he called about his complaint against his girlfriend. There's no dispute that he consented to a search of his home. But a consent to search your home or calling the officers about an unrelated complaint or, excuse me, a different complaint doesn't mean you lose your protections under Miranda.
True.
The fact that...
I agree to that.
Well,
if he's in custody, they have to get the Miranda case.
Exactly, and that's our point.
All boils down to whether he's in custody under the facts of the case.
We think there are several facts here that suggest that he was in custody.
Yeah, but I say that's the issue.
That's absolutely the issue. Now, nevertheless, without the benefit of Hall's own testimony, and that's another issue that we're appealing on, the magistrate judge that determined that he was not entitled to the Miranda protections because he was not in custody. And we believe that this determination was error, and any statements he made during that interrogation should have been suppressed. And it's very important to note in this regard that the government does not argue that the denial of his suppression motion was harmless error. They don't say that in their brief.
They just said it wasn't error at all.
That's right. But it's important that if the denial of suppression motion was erroneous, they're not arguing that it wouldn't have affected the verdict. And we've said it would affect the verdict because it would go, statements about the location of the gun would go against his defense that he didn't have knowing possession of the gun and the ammunition. Now, alternatively, this court could conclude that the magistrate judge abused her discretion by denying Hall's request to testify in support of this suppression motion.
They didn't. They found ammunition, right?
They did.
Before the gun, before he indicated the gun was in a ceiling?
Absolutely correct. But we think that the statements were still highly prejudicial and affected the verdict because the statements were powerful evidence that he did have knowing possession because he knew where to look for the gun. His whole defense...
Well, isn't it an offense just to possess the ammunition?
It is, but not if you don't knowingly possess it. And that was his defense at trial, that his girlfriend had left the ammunition and the gun in his home, which were not in plain sight. Officer Gutierrez testified he had to open a closet door, steel closet door, to see the ammunition. The gun was above a ceiling tile. So his defense at trial was that his girlfriend left the contraband there without his knowledge the night before, and that's why he couldn't have been convicted because he didn't have knowing possession in this case. As I've said, we also think the magistrate judge abused her discretion by not allowing him to testify in support of his suppression motion. We believe it was an abuse of discretion for several reasons. First of all, when the magistrate judge denied his request, she had already reopened the matter to hear further testimony from another witness. The district judge had not yet ruled on the recommendation on the suppression motion. The government did not articulate any prejudice it would suffer from having Hall tell his version in his own words. And finally, the magistrate judge relied on an apparent waiver made by his former attorney at the first suppression hearing without establishing that that waiver was knowing and voluntarily made by Hall. So we believe alternatively, this court does not find that it's appropriate to reverse the denial of suppression motion. This court could remand for a new suppression hearing at which Hall is allowed to testify in support of his suppression motion and thus fill out the record in this case. And I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Coyne?
May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Koenig and I appear on behalf of the United States. Good morning. I never thought a case about removal jurisdiction would pack the gallery as much as it did. But I suppose people like Diet Coke a lot more than cases about guns and drugs.
You were hoping they were all here for you. And hands
what can I say, Your Honor?
I
would like to encourage the court to affirm Mr. Hall's conviction on the basis that he has waived the issues that he is raising now in this court. And I say that not because the government's arguments on the underlying suppression issue are particularly weak, but because the government believes the case for enforcing the waiver rule is particularly strong. Simply put, the appellant should not be allowed to raise arguments here that he chose not to raise in front of the district court. And I use the word chose deliberately because that's what waiver is about, right? You know you have an argument, you're given an opportunity to present it to the district court, and you fail to do so.
Just to clarify the chronology, the suppression hearing is held before the magistrate judge. He declines to testify through counsel, so waives his right to testify. The magistrate judge issues a formal recommendation to the district judge, and then the request, the firing of the attorney and the request to testify, the belated request to testify comes? Is that
That's correct, Your Honor. The initial recommendation of Magistrate Judge Gorenz was on Judge Randa's desk at the time the request came to reopen the proceedings.
Okay.
And then the second one came through in which the warning was given you have to object within or make any objections within 10 days.
Yes, sir. Both of the recommendations, the initial one and the final one, contained that warning about the consequences of failing to object. I would like to make a few more brief points about the waiver issue. I won't rehash all of the points in the government's brief, but I would like to respond to some of the points that were raised in the reply brief, which incidentally does not mention the Hernandez-Rivas case from this circuit, which I think is indistinguishable and requires enforcement of the waiver rule here. The defendant claims that the reasons for having the objections requirement, judicial efficiency, are not implicated in this case. I would disagree. I would argue that the reasons for the waiver rule are particularly compelling in this case because there's a claim that the magistrate judge erred by disallowing Hall's testimony. Under Section 636 of Title 28, Judge Randa would have been empowered to hear additional testimony or remand the matter to the magistrate judge if he agreed with the argument that Hall should have been allowed to testify. He was never given a chance to do that, and so we're in a situation now that's judicially very inefficient and would require, if the court agrees with Hall on that point, a retrial or a remand for further proceedings in front of the magistrate judge. So I disagree that the reasons for the rule are absent in this case, and I again see no basis for distinguishing the Hernandez-Rivas case. The defendant also argues that there's no prejudice to the government here, and on that point I would just say that the only cases in which this court has deviated from enforcing the waiver rule on the basis of no prejudice were cases in which objections were filed several days late. This is a case where there were no objections at all, and that was following the warning that Judge Kaney referred to earlier. And lastly, there's a big section of the reply brief that seems to be devoted to the argument that this court should apply plain error review. I think this court's precedent is very clear that the court regards the failure to object as waiver and not forfeiture. And again, I would ask you to affirm on the basis of Hernandez-Rivas and the chronology that occurred in this case. Any further questions from the panel?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
My recollection is that Hernandez-Rivas involved a claim by an appellant that he should get around the objections requirement because his counsel was provided ineffective assistance by not filing the objections. That is certainly not our claim here at all. We are arguing, as we have in our reply brief, that the waiver or forfeiture rule should not apply in this case for several reasons, the most important of which is that the district court conducted its own review of the record. And several circuits have found that this is more than sufficient to revive the right to appeal, because the whole rationale for the objections requirement, as the Supreme Court laid out in Thomas v. Arne, is to not circumvent district court review. That's not implicated here because the district court said, I've looked at the record, I agree with the magistrate judge's conclusions. and that record included the denial of Hall's request to testify. And this court has never, never rejected this position. So that's still open. Additionally, with particular respect to the denial of his request to testify...
Why should we have a rule about 10 days to object?
Because it's supposed to give the loser the opportunity to tee up the issues for the district court to look at, and that's exactly correct. But as many circuits have reasoned, that rationale falls away when the district court looks at the issues anyhow. And so the district court has done its job anyhow, even if those issues were teed up or not, and so it's proper to hear them on appeal.
Circuits have ruled that, but not the Seventh. So.
The Seventh has never ruled it, but they've never rejected it. And I could not find a circuit that has rejected that analysis. Second, with particular respect to the denial of the request to testify, if you look at the magistrate judge's ruling on that issue, there's no warning in there about the need to file objections within 10 days. Nothing. And so this court has suggested that you need to have that warning before it's going to enforce the default, and that's our other reason why Hall should be allowed to appeal the issues in this case.
Thank you.
We'd just ask for either a remand for a new trial or a new suppression hearing.
And you did take this case by appointment, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, you have the thanks of the court and your vigorous representation. You're fine. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement. Court in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.